The Local Government News Roundup is proudly supported by Davidson. For 30 years, Davidson has been strengthening the local government sector by identifying and providing the people, expertise and experience that local government needs to enhance its capability, productivity and performance. Davidson is nationally recognised for its executive recruitment services and over the past 4 years has built a business advisory practice rapidly evolving into one of the nation's foremost and trusted local government business consultancy firms. The Davidson methodology and approach is simple. Thinking beyond now and aiming to be a valued partner with your local government, not just for the immediate project, but for the next 30 years. Speak to Justin Hanney or Seamus Scanlon to find out more, or head to davidsonwp.com.au. Davidson, your future, your partner. Hello and welcome to another edition of Roundup Unfiltered from the Local Government News Roundup, brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association and by Davidson Recruitment and Business Advisory Services. Former local government CEO and public servant John Watson recently stepped down as chair of the Victorian Local Government Grants Commission after 11 years. He's led at least three councils, held senior roles in state government, and still serves on several boards and audit committees. I took the opportunity to sit down with John to reflect on a career in local government that has seen many changes and reforms, and to find out what's next for one of the elder statesmen of the sector in Victoria. Delighted to have as my special guest on the podcast today, John Watson, who just very recently took off one of his hats, the chair hat with the Victorian Local Government Grants Commission, but he's had a long and storied career in local government in Victoria and beyond, and I thought it might be an opportunity to catch up and have a chat about that career. John, welcome to the Roundup.
Chris, it's a pleasure to be here.
And lovely to see you. Of course, I should say up front, we have worked together in various capacities, including some joint audit committee responsibilities. A question that people asked me along the way is just how many audit committees is John Watson on? Can you answer that question definitively for us right now?
I think the current count's about 12 or 13, if you include Flinders Island, the audit panel out of Tasmania.
Or let's talk about that in just a moment. But it must be a bit of a challenge to keep track of all those 12 or 13 different committees. How do you do that?
I think I've developed a reasonable system for keeping track. And the remarkable thing is that I've been very lucky. There's very few clashes. Yeah. And a lot of time in between. So it works reasonably well.
Lots of reading, John.
Yeah, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I know from experience, it is a good way to stay connected with current issues and trends in the sector more broadly, isn't it?
It is. And I keep telling councils and anybody else that will listen that the Audit and Risk Committee is the most important committee that a council has.
Yep. Yeah. Why do you say that?
Well, it's required by statute and actually had a hand in that originally by recommending that as an amendment to the old Local Government Act. But it's a continuous improvement process. It's within closed walls. You can provide constructive criticism, develop a relationship with the staff and councillors. But I think the most important thing, which is often overlooked, it's a really important protection for the councillors and management. Much better to identify a problem and perhaps deal with it that way than perhaps read it in the local paper.
Yes, very good point. John, I do want to take a bit of a trip down memory lane with you, if you don't mind. Okay. You've been around, if you don't mind my saying, local government in Victoria for a very long time. What's your earliest memory of your connection with the sector?
I originally joined the former Shire of Warrail, based out of Leongatha in Gippsland, as a junior administrative officer. That was my start in local government.
And what were you doing in that role?
A bit of everything. I did filing, kept the ledgers all handwritten, tried to balance them. Interestingly, the one thing that I really do remember is the ladies, if I can say, in the typing pool, they hand-typed all of the rate notices from cards, and we had to balance them, of course, reconcile them, and we had paper tape adding machines. And that's how we added them all up.
Yeah.
Great streams of adding machine tape. And the trick was, and my first boss there, Keith Bryden, the Shire Secretary, he said that if it's, I think it's a while since I thought about that, but it's out by a factor of, I think it was 9, then it was 99% of compensating error. You've typed something, you know, 2 numbers back to front. And wow. It was right.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, I guess the accuracy level's pretty surprising considering when we think now the tools that we have, what they managed to do back then without that technology.
Yep. I was pretty good on the hand. The loading machine, yes.
Tell me, was there a tea lady back in those days in that building?
No, we didn't have a tea lady. I think that had already passed.
Not in some places. The very first council I was at, the tea lady had only just gone by the wayside. Well, things have changed a lot. So at the time, was that part of a definitive or deliberate career move to be in local government, or was it a position of opportunity?
Well, I actually had an intent to become a health inspector.
All right.
Family friend, and you know, I thought that'd be a good career. And no offence to health inspectors or what they're called now, but I think I made a better choice when I took up an advertised position as a junior admin officer, because I think it's led me to a much more interesting career for myself.
So where did that, in the early stages, where did that lead you to next?
I studied as a municipal clerk by correspondence through the RMIT. I finished that ducks of the course that year, actually. Beat the full-time students. And then I guess as you do, you look around for perhaps another opportunity. And I got the job as the Deputy Shire Secretary, Shire of Buller, based out of Sunbury. And I stayed there for a considerable period, but a period of growth for my career, ending up as Shire Secretary and then the first CEO of the Buller Shire. And not long after that, of course, local government amalgamations came about. I was fortunate to get a place as an interim CEO, and that was at Moonee Valley, and then secured the first full-time CEO role at the Hume City Council, which very interestingly included most of my old Shire of Buller and all of my Shire of Buller staff, which was an interesting challenge in terms of setting up a structure for Hume.
They must have been particularly challenging, but I also imagine exciting times, that amalgamation period, given the changes that had to be overseen.
They were. I've often said they were character building times.
Yeah.
Yes, I inherited all of the former Broadmeadows staff and all the Buller staff. And of course, it was coinciding with compulsory competitive tendering and mandated rate reductions. And of course, the only way you could achieve the latter was through staff reduction. Roughly the numbers I think that we reduced were from something like 1,600 down to around about 700 odd. So it was a massive change and impact on a lot of people.
Even to this day, you can go to some councils and there will be pockets of that community that still talk about those amalgamations and what they've lost, I guess, from having those smaller council identities. Do you think it's time that all that's put behind us?
Look, I think it is. I think there was a lost opportunity, perhaps a year, 18 months, 2 years after amalgamation, to perhaps go back and tidy things up a little bit in terms of some boundaries. But that comment about community sort of hanging on, it actually followed me in an interesting way. Being the first CEO there and the former CEO of the Bullershire, Sunbury, there was a long-running campaign for Sunbury to be separated out of Hume and as a separate municipality. In fact, the government at one stage put the orders in place for that to happen. The date was set, it was going to happen. The government changed, and at that stage I was the chief administrator at Brimbank Council. The minister asked myself with one other, undertake an audit of that process. The result of that was that it was clearly flawed financially. The recommendation to the change government was to reverse the orders, which they did. So it was an interesting time, because having the history and then being asked to do that, and at the same time still living in Sunbury.
Yes, yes. It's followed you, as you say. While we're recording this, there's talk in New South Wales about some councils wanting to undo forced amalgamations that happened a few years ago, and they've put cost estimates on those demergers of $150 million plus for each of those councils. I imagine, given your Sunbury experience, that those numbers probably don't surprise you much.
I think that's a very large number, but the way in which the proposal was constructed, it relied on effectively taking money from Melbourne Airport, which is in Hume, and would not have been in the new Sunbury municipality, and giving it to Sunbury for a number of years, and that broke a whole lot of rules and principles, and without that, it simply wasn't viable.
Yeah. We've skipped a significant chunk in your resume there, John, between being CEO at Hume and being chief administrator at Brimbank. For at least a fair chunk of that time, you were the executive director of Local Government Victoria. How did you get into the state government roles?
Well, it was interesting. I wasn't at Hume for a great length of time. I had a bit of a health issue and actually dropped out of the sector. Prue Digby, who we all know, became the new exec director of Local Government Victoria. She invited me in for 6 months while she sort of worked out her own little structure in there. I went in there and I was the director of governance and legislation, which was quite interesting. Time marched by, and I did that for about 6 years. Prue moved up to a DepSec role, and I took over as the exec director of local government, did that for another 6 years, roughly, which brought me to 2012 when I retired.
Right. in inverted commas.
My wife tells me I've retired a number of times,
yes,
but not really. But at that point, the then minister asked me to do two things. One was to take over the chair of the Local Government Grants Commission, the Victoria Grants Commission, as it was called in those days, and to go to Brimbank as the new chair of the panel of administrators. Brimbank had been in administration for 3 years, and I did it for a further 4 years. So that's how I got to Brimbank.
There's a song in that. That's how I got to Brimbank. Just going back to the LGV phase, where does that sit in your list of positions that are giving you the most or least satisfaction? Do you look back on that period fondly?
Before I go there, I'd say I've been very fortunate. I've enjoyed immensely everything I've done in my career and the things I'm still doing. Where that sits, it's pretty high. when you're a local government CEO, and Chris, you'd know this, you've been a local government CEO, and I think you were a CEO when I was at Brimbank and we had interactions.
Correct. That's correct.
You have the ability to implement decisions quickly, a lot of delegation. So, you know, it's a very hands-on, effective role where you actually see things happening and make things happen. In government, it's very different. You provide briefings and advice to your minister, and sometimes that advice is taken, sometimes it's not. It's a much slower process, but I enjoyed it because it was different, and I had an opportunity to actually influence through the minister of the day the Local Government Act, you know, the very thing that ruled our world, the Bible of local government. Mm-hmm. So it was really, it was an enjoyable period. I got a lot out of it.
Just going back to your comments about being a local government CEO, it sort of reminds me that there's periodically, and it's certainly been recently, commentary from some quarters that local government CEOs have too much authority to implement and to make decisions. You've just talked about one of the advantages being able to move quickly. Do you think it's a fair criticism, or is it born of a misunderstanding of how that council CEO relationship works?
I think it's the latter, more of a misunderstanding. The CEO, I mean, quite clearly, the legislation says the CEO is responsible for the organisation. And essentially for delivering on the council's policies and decisions. The extent to which a council provides delegations to a CEO is its decision, and any limitations that they might put on those delegations. So I think that the council being responsible for the management, the employment and performance management of their one employee, the chief executive, actually is the great opportunity for them to, together with their CEO, develop the relationship and the differences between what one does and the other in a way that each understands, and it should not get to the situation where anybody says the CEO's got too much power. Mm. The power is derived through legislation, but largely it comes from what the council gives the CEO.
How do you react to what inevitably will happen this year as we go to council elections? We're going to hear potential candidates saying that they're campaigning on a campaign of getting rid of the CEO because they've got too much power and the council can't control them. How do councils respond and deal with that?
I think it's it will happen. It's happened in the past, and it's a great disappointment. Because people canvassing on that basis, I think, are showing they don't understand how the system works. The CEO is like the bureaucracy within state or federal government. It serves the government of the day, and that's what a good CEO does, is serve the council of the day. Hmm. And if people understood that fully, I think there should be less of that attempt to, I'll get on council, I'll deal with this, I'll get rid of the CEO. It's not the CEO that should be their problem.
So I've heard a lot of CEOs say over recent years that the job is getting harder, it's getting more complex. You've been there, you sit across audit committees, you can see the complexity of the issues that come across the table. Do you think the job is getting to a point where it is more than one person and one organisation should have to deal with?
Look, it's certainly, like everything I think in life, is become more complex. There is always, you know, added responsibilities, legislation, you know, shifting of responsibilities to councils, not always with the money to go with it, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is very difficult. The organisations are becoming more complex and larger to deliver the number of services. So yes, it's clearly a bigger job. But CEOs, I think it's fair to say, are reasonably well remunerated for the responsibility they take on. I think it's really a matter of building, hopefully, that level of relationship and trust between them and their council, and getting on with the task. I don't think anybody should be making too many excuses. They should go into these positions eyes wide open.
Before we move off this onto a couple of other topics, the data would suggest that the turnover at the CEO level is much higher than perhaps other periods of history. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about where the next generation of CEOs are coming from and how well prepared they are for the modern challenges?
I think we should all be a little concerned about that, because you're right, the turnover rate is probably too high. And some of that, unfortunately, goes back to that relationship issue between councillors and their CEOs. And I think lack of full understanding of how that should work. Perhaps that's the area where it might be addressed in some way, as to better educate, better train councillors in their role as the employer and what it means. Mm. The CEO remuneration and other matter type committees are now in place in a lot of councils, most councils, I think. I think they have a real role to play to help councils to understand what their role is, that they are an employer, and that they have very clear responsibilities and legal responsibilities as to how they relate and manage their employee, the CEO. More education in that space.
Yeah. And are there enough protections in place to stop the CEO position becoming politicised or caught up in the politics that can play out at a council level?
Well, certainly over time there have been CEOs who have, fallen into the trap of aligning too closely with a particular group of their council. And that's often when numbers within the council might change, or the grouping within the council without any election can change too, and then the relationships can sour. Hmm. So I think the discipline for any CEO should be to serve the council, not to fall into the trap of serving a particular group of the council. Hmm. When you provide information, you provide it to every councillor equally. They are your employer, and you should respect that and every one of them that makes up the council.
Hmm. Let's move on to some other things. You've just stepped down from the chair role of the Grants Commission, as we mentioned, after 11 years. How significant a role has that been for you, and how do you look back at the contribution, I guess, you've made through the Grants Commission to the sector more broadly?
It's one I'm immensely proud of, and it's a role which I thoroughly enjoyed. Certainly, a real responsibility with my fellow Grants Commission members to make sure that the recommendations for the allocation of the annual grants coming from Canberra are fair across our 79 councils, having regard to the principles which commissions around Australia have to have regard to. We have developed and improved the methodology, the grants formula that we've inherited from prior commissions in Victoria. I'm proud to say that I think it is the best model of all the jurisdictions around Australia, but others might say the same thing.
Why do you say that, though, John? What makes this model better?
Look, without perhaps going into commenting too much about others, it's the integrity of our methodology is so strong. There is absolutely no part of it where a council gets more than what the methodology produces. We collect a lot of data. The commission collects a lot of data from councils and a lot of other places, it's a quite complex formula that results from that. But it's all about assessing the relative need of each council versus the other 78. And the thing that we've done over my time has been to, wherever possible, recognising that our smaller rural councils do have the greatest need, quite clearly, is to move money whenever we can in that direction. Mm. And to make no excuse for that, we have a council out on the South Australian border in Victoria that over 30% of their revenue comes from this source. Without it, they wouldn't exist. And there are many others not far behind them. Mm. So it's vital. Perhaps I could say about my greatest disappointment as chair of the commission is the erosion of the pool of funds available from the federal government. Mm. These grants were commenced in the days of the Whitlam government, Gough Whitlam. And so it's been around for quite a while now. When they were introduced, and I know a whole lot of things have changed in the meantime, but in terms of the assessed relative need of each council, the commissions were able to allocate about 40% of that need. Today it's around 16, 17%.
Wow.
So there's been quite a clawback in various ways at the federal level. And that's a shame because local government is so vital within our communities.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Local Government News Roundup is brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association. As Victorian councils go to elections later this year, the VLGA is ready to support communities and councils in good governance. A series of workshops has been designed to increase understanding of the local government sector, the work of councils, and the role of a councillor. Registrations are being taken now for workshops in May on standing for local government and local women leading change. And member councils should look out for the VLGA's 2024 Local Government Election Pre-Candidate Prospectus, available soon. Find out more about how the VLGA can support your council and community during this important time in the local government election cycle. Visit vlga.org.au.
How much of that was due to that pause in indexation that was in place for a little while?
That was one of them. They broke the nexus between taxation take and the way the money was given to local government. There's been a number of things along the way, but certainly the pause for 3 years, that hurt because that money's lost forever. You just don't go back to where it would have been. Yes.
Yeah. Did you get lobbied much? I know you've talked about that tightness of the methodology and the integrity, but did you get lobbied by councillors, councils, about how you were making those decisions?
The commission, and over my period, we had over 200 meetings with councils, many of them out there visiting the councils all around Victoria. We tried to visit each council in about a four-year cycle. It gave us an opportunity to explain how we did our work, which I think was always well received, even though there was disappointment that the amount that they individually got wasn't greater. But it was also an opportunity for us to have a conversation. It was surprising that occasionally we'd get back in the car and something that was said in the meeting, we'd say, we need to do a bit of work on that. Didn't always lead to a change or a tweaking of the formula, but sometimes it did. Yeah. So they were useful, and I don't think I can really recall where we were subjected to, you know, excessive criticism other than disappointment that the money wasn't greater.
Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned earlier amongst your audit committee responsibilities is Flinders Island. Is that your first foray into the sector outside of Victoria?
It is. They were having difficulty getting a chair. Through one of my other roles as a director on the board of the Northern Hospital, it was suggested I might take a look at it. So I did, and took up the role, and it's different. You know, it's a small island municipality. Interestingly, they don't have to have internal audit, and they haven't got any, although I'm encouraging them to go down that path for their own protections. Three independent members, and no councillors on the on the panel.
Right.
So it's quite different. So it's a bit of a change. Yes.
And on a completely different scale, I would think, to some of the larger councils that you are involved
with
the audit level. Yeah.
I hope they're appreciating the fact that I've been able to give them, you know, a number of examples of policies and things that are helping them, because they simply don't have the resources to do a lot for it themselves.
Does this entail going to Flinders Island for meetings at some point?
Well, so far I haven't, there was one of the agreements when I took it on that I do it online. But I'm keen to get down there, and they're keen to get me down there. So we'll hopefully arrange that this year.
Well, maybe now that you've stepped aside from the Grants Commission, there might be an opening in your calendar, John.
That's right. That's right.
So you said you've retired a few times, using the word in inverted commas. Is retirement for real something that you have or will contemplate?
Look, I think, in terms of the Northern Hospital, you know, I was due to finish during this year, but Northern recently underwent an amalgamation with Northern is a massive institution. 8,000 or 9,000 employees and, you know, half a dozen campuses, but recently amalgamated with the Kilmore Hospital, which was a seamless amalgamation, one of which we were proud, and I think the government was very pleased with. But the result of that was that we all had to be reappointed. So I got reappointed to June plus 2 years. So I'll be there a little while. An end will come to that. And some of the audit committees that I've been working on, still working on, my term or terms are reaching a point where I start to drop away. Whether I take on any more is another question. I'll see at the time. Yeah.
You must enjoy it, though, to be doing that.
Oh, yes, yes. I think I'd... mentally, I'd probably suffer if I wasn't able to keep active in that way. I think I'm contributing.
Yeah, you certainly are. And you've recently also contributed as a municipal monitor. The Watson report from Darabin, I think, is being held up as a bit of a model, because there is, if I can say, quite a bit of variation in the way monitors report back. And I know the issues can be different as well. Is that a role that you take on thinking you're going to enjoy it, or is it? Do you have a different sort of frame of mind about being a monitor?
Well, it's one where, you know, no prior experience, and there's not a lot of textbook information. In fact, there's none as to how you approach the job. I think there's an opportunity there for something to be written about how to approach the task, even though each situation will be different. Like all things I've done, I actually enjoyed it, and I saw it as an opportunity to help that council through some difficulties. And when I left after 9 months, I think that it was a changed place. The report you mentioned, as a monitor, you do have to provide a report to the minister at the end of the period. And I saw the other reports and understand their different circumstances, but over 9 months, it cost the council a reasonable amount of money to have a monitor there, and I took the decision that deserved a reasonably thorough report, and that's why I produced it the way I did.
Mm. And that's certainly what you delivered at the end of that 9 months, John. Is there anything left on your list career-wise that you'd like to do and haven't yet?
In a way, and I'm not sort of trying to boast, but I think I've had a fairly unique set of roles in the sector. I've been a CEO in three places, the exec director of local government, Victoria, the chair of a panel of administrators, which effectively meant I was the mayor of Brimbank for 4 years, and a municipal monitor, and doing work on the through the audit committee. So pretty fair coverage of what happens around local government. So unless there's a new sort of role produced, I think I've pretty much covered the bases.
So would you accept the title of, and I'm just going to bestow it from the roundup with no particular fanfare, as the doyen of Victorian local government?
Oh, I'm not sure I'd go that far. No, there's a lot of very, very good people out there that have been in the system and are in the system that are doing amazing things and have done a number of roles. Yeah.
Humble to the end. Thank you, John. It's been really interesting to hear about your career journey and those insights, and I really appreciate you sitting down with me to chat today.
I've really enjoyed it, Chris. So thank you very much.
My guest today on Roundup Unfiltered has been John Watson. Good to know that we'll be seeing him around the sector for some time to come, all being well. I hope you've enjoyed this special edition of the podcast brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association with support from Davidson Recruitment and Business Advisory Services. Regular editions will return soon when we get underway with Season 4 of The Roundup, but check your podcast queue for more special editions of the program in the meantime. Thanks for listening, and bye for now. The Local Government News Roundup is brought to you by the Victorian Local Governance Association. As Victorian councils go to elections later this year, the VLGA is ready to support communities and councils in good governance. A series of workshops has been designed to increase understanding of the local government sector, the work of councils, and the role of a councillor. Registrations are being taken now for workshops in May on standing for local government and local women leading change. And member councils should look out for the VLGA's 2024 Local Government Election Pre-Candidate Prospectus, available soon. Find out more about how the VLGA can support your council and community during this important time in the local government election cycle. Visit vlga.org.au.